as they come from the very beginning of the book, is that you don't have to believe it, you don't have to accept it, you don't have to welcome it. Some of it's going to be hard to believe, some of it might startle you. You're not asked to do it and analyze it to death, but if you use it, you'll see that it's true. So it's not really so much that I'm trying to get anybody to believe anything, or the Course is trying to get you to believe anything, so much as it's presenting a set of ideas. If they resonate to you, with you, and you see how you can apply it and you can use it, great. If you don't, if it doesn't resonate, don't. That's fair enough, right? Okay. What do you think the goal of the Course in Miracles is? What do you think the Course in Miracles is trying to achieve?
Forgiveness.
That's definitely one of the things, for real. Anybody else? Why do you study the Course? What is it that the Course is promising you that you're trying to achieve enough to even come and check it out? What do you think the purpose of it is?
Freedom from the ego.
Yep, you what?
Freedom from the ego.
And what do you mean by freedom from the ego?
Well, not constantly being caught up in all this ego garbage, all the traps.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To be able to live from the Holy Spirit.
Right. Cool.
Which I achieve about 2 seconds out of the day.
Well, stop bragging. Stop bragging. I'm telling you, show off. 2 seconds. I'm telling you. What about you, brother? What were you getting ready for?
Atonement.
What does atonement mean to you?
Forgetting the illusion or the dream that I made up.
Mm-hmm.
Becoming one with the source.
Right. 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 Cool. So, I mean, there are many facets to this diamond, so all these answers are correct. Anybody else? I just like I said, Wednesday's a smaller group, so I think it's important to get dialogue going on Wednesday and some questions and some discussion and stuff. So it's not about just me talking the whole hour.
What's the question?
The question was, what do you think the Course is trying to achieve? Like, why do you study it? What do you think it's offering you that you're trying to achieve?
Remembering who you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You really are. Uh-huh. Cool. Yeah.
And like 600 pages. 600 pages.
Understanding the truth.
And getting a better understanding of the truth, you know. I love how the Course defines forgiveness. You mentioned forgiveness. It doesn't define forgiveness the way we think of forgiveness conventionally, which it says is trying to overlook what you really think somebody did to you. When you say forgiveness to most people, that's what they think you're saying to them. This person really did something to me, and you're asking me to overlook that. You're asking me to pardon that. And the Course in Miracles definition of forgiveness is a correct interpretation of the situation that would allow you to have peace, so that you could hear the voice of Holy Spirit, the voice of your own spiritual or inner guide, which is totally different from what we think forgiveness is. It's not about the other person at all, really. Because let's say somebody did something to you when you were 10 and they died since then. Well, all the pain that you're carrying around from whatever happened is only affecting you. So it would be only when you change your perception of what happened that you give yourself peace. Right? Because the person's gone. So it's not about them apologizing for what they did to you. But you're still feeling hurt about it. So you're the one that's carrying the hurt around. And the hurt is coming from what you're telling yourself about what happened to you. So forgiving that person would be you changing your interpretation of what happened to the point that you could give yourself peace. That's what forgiveness is from a Course perspective. And that's why the idea of forgiveness is not, it's something that everybody said they ought to do, but you never see people jumping up and down to do it. You know, it's funny. I can say I'm doing a workshop or a seminar on forgiveness, and people say, oh, yeah. But they pretty much don't come. Okay? I mean, I've done this for a long time. But if you turn around and you say, I'm doing a workshop on letting go of anger, guilt, grievances in the past, they'll go, man, I really need to do that. What, you know, give me, you know, what, sign me up. But they don't realize that's what forgiveness is. But if you say forgiveness, in my experience, 30 years of doing this, it never gets anybody excited. Because most people think they're already kind of forgiving people. So when you say forgive, they think, oh, okay, well, I don't know. But if you say let go of the past that's blocking me, they'll go, oh, yeah, I do. I really need some stuff in the past I need to let go of. So the Course is basically based on the principle then that if you can change your interpretation of your experience, you can change the way you feel. And if you can change the way you feel and get the conflict out, then you can hear your inner guidance, because we all have the voice for God or Spirit or Holy Spirit within us, but we're not hearing the voice for God. We're hearing the voice we made up. So the Course in Miracles is about teaching us new interpretations of the experiences in our lives so that we can have inner peace, so that we can hear our guidance. That's really what it's about. And so we left off on the paragraph that says, the special relationships of the world. We in Roman numeral 12 in the preface. XII, it looks like XII. Oh yeah, and the other thing I love is the whole idea of the ego. Because the ego is nothing but your story that you identify with. So everybody's got a story. You talk to anybody, they're going to tell you their story. They're going to tell you what they're upset about, what they've been through as a child, what they believe, what somebody's doing to them, how they feel, what kind of person they think they need to be with, how they think they need to look. All that's your ego. All that's just the image of yourself that you're making up. And then, he says, then we turn around and we try to act out that image in the world. And that's not who we really are. You're not who you made yourself up to be. And we're not who we are necessarily taught we are. That's why all of us could sit in this room and all of us have a different interpretation of what's happening. Because each one of us got a different story that we're telling ourselves about what's going on. And when you really realize that you really identify with your story to the point that you think is you, it's mind boggling. You know, most people think they are their story. Some people are so into their story that if you ask them who they are, they'll tell you what they do. They'll say, you know, I am a secretary. I am a salesman. So that's you totally lost in your role at that point. And so then they would judge their value based on how many sales they got. So if they didn't get a lot of sales, they felt like they wouldn't work for our person. If they do, so they're totally judging themselves by totally unreal values, because their value has nothing to do with whether or not they sell 10 cable deals today. But we all do that. We all have a story. Then we judge ourselves according to the story, and then he says we think we are the story that we tell ourselves. It seems elementary, like when I say this like this, but really what I just said is the root of every bit of not being excited and happy and fulfilled that any one of you or I may feel. It's rooted in just what I just said. You know, if you don't feel good about yourself, if you don't feel excited about your life, if you don't get up in the morning, you know, like looking forward to what's going to happen to you today and feel like a lot of opportunities, then your interpretation of your life and yourself needs to be straightened out. It means that my story isn't a story that's inspiring me. And when you look at most people, you tend to not see a lot of joy and smiling faces. You know, most of them have, the Course calls it the picture crucifixion. You always, you know, you kind of want to walk up to them and go, hey, what's going on? How you doing? You know, you look pretty sad. Most people look like they need cheering up. They don't walk around with a beaming smile. It's like, I got an issue right now I'm thinking about. Look at them on the bus, look at them in the movie. Just watch people. They're usually preoccupied with whatever it is they think that needs to happen for them to be happy. So the Course says that we form special relationships out of that sense of need to validate ourselves, right? And he says the special relationships of the world are destructive, selfish, and childishly egocentric. That pretty much covers it. He says, yet if your special relationships are given to the Holy Spirit, these relationships can become the holiest things on earth, the miracles that point the way to the return to heaven. The world uses its special relationships as a final weapon of exclusion and a demonstration of separateness, but love or the Holy Spirit transforms relationships into perfect lessons in forgiveness and an awakening from the dream. So each special relationship really is an opportunity to let perceptions be healed and to let your errors be corrected. Each relationship is another chance to forgive oneself by forgiving the other, and then each one becomes still another invitation to the Holy Spirit and the remembrance of God. So people in the world have two kinds of relationships. They're either in a relationship that's destructive and childishly egocentric, that's all about me, all about controlling, all about dominating, all about fear. Or he says you're in a relationship that you're using to wake yourself up, to let yourself be healed and to let your mistakes be corrected. Another opportunity to love yourself. So either the relationships that I'm in are increasing my feeling of love for myself and helping me heal my perception of myself and bringing me closer to the source, or my relationships are taking me further into fear, guilt, conflict, depression, and anger. It depends on whether you're giving your relationship to the Holy Spirit, which the Course would say is the part of you that's love, or you're giving your relationship to the part of you that's fear and thinks that it's separate. So every relationship is either being used for one of those two purposes. Every person in my life is being used for one or two purposes. I had a situation that came up this morning that I realized I got triggered. One of the things that I use to trigger myself is someone trying to impose their beliefs on me. That I find that sometimes I get reactive to that. Because I've been over backwards to let people be, to let them more or less, whatever you think is your path, then I'm going to let you live that path. I'm not going to condemn that or judge that. That's, you know, that's between you and your God to go on that path. So I found I was being triggered. And then all of a sudden, because it was a reflection of a long-term special relationship that I had for a long time that seemed to go around in a dance. And all of a sudden, right in the middle of it, I realized that it was a trick. All of a sudden, it wasn't about at all what I thought the situation was about, that I thought I need to talk to this person about and get it straight, you know, about, you know, you don't really, I don't try to impose my beliefs on you, so you shouldn't try to impose your blah, 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 blah. All of a sudden, right in the middle of that, I realized it was, the whole thing was just a trick. It was just something to draw me into the illusion, draw me into separation, draw me into conflict. So I realized all of a sudden that it wasn't about them at all. It was about me not forgetting that it didn't mean anything and that I'm innocent and I got the right to go in the direction I want to go, and it has nothing to do with what that person is saying or doing anyway. And at that point, I came back to center. You know, where the ego part of me, the insane part, the fearful part would have said, go, the thing is about you trying to talk to this person and straighten this issue out with them. Maybe we will communicate at some point. But the main trick was to make me think I was a body, to make me think I was just at this effect level, this victim. Forget the spiritual truth that I've been studying. I was very proud of myself for that, because you don't know if you're really getting any of this until the situations come up in your life that seem to be upsetting. It's easy to say you believe any of this as long as you don't have to try to apply it to anything. People are spiritual giants as long as the situation doesn't come up that they really have to apply it. And that's how you can tell whether or not you believe anything you're talking about. So I felt good to know that when I was being sucked into an upsetting situation, that I remembered that it was a trick. And what made me know that it was a trick was the way I felt. The way I felt. I was losing my peace. And in losing my peace, I knew I was going in the opposite direction of the truth. So my feelings saved me, where my feelings used to take me further into the anger. Usually if I felt upset, I would get more into it. But it was this. But now my mind goes, you're upset. You're going in the wrong direction. You need to re-perceive this. You need to stop. It doesn't matter what you're upset about. Your feeling is letting you know you're being sucked into the whole thought system of projection and blame. Because once you get completely sucked into it, you're gone. You can't be reached until you come back out of it. You know how it is. As soon as you really lose it, people just will step back and let you be on your vacation from sanity for a while until you get back, because you're gone. You're gone. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine about that just yesterday, how in relationships, as long as a person feels peaceful and loving, they tend to be of the highest spiritual caliber. But the minute that they feel frightened, then they go into another mind, like almost like you with another person that you've never seen before. I'm sure all of you, haven't you all had that experience? Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's what the Course is saying. They go from their sane mind to their insane mind. And the trick is to try to catch yourself before you get to your insane mind. And most people try to fix it after they've gotten there, but once you've gotten there, you can't listen to reason usually. You're too gone. So to try to talk to people when they're insanely angry or upset is really silly. It literally doesn't do any good. All you can really do is hold space for that person and give them a safe place to vent. And then when they get a chance to get it all out, maybe at that point there can be some sane conversation. But to try to reason with them while they're in their childish, egocentric, destructive behavior is just going to take you further into your own childish, egocentric, destructive behavior. Okay, and so this first paragraph is basically, this paragraph I just covered is really saying, oh, this person is giving me an opportunity to have my perception healed. this person is giving me an opportunity to have my perception healed. This person is giving me, my relationship is giving me an opportunity to have some peace and some love. So that's what this paragraph is saying. Any thoughts about that or any questions about that? If you're telling yourself, if they change, I would be happy, that's the path that will never work. So if you're saying, if my boss changed, I'd be happy. If my job changed, I'd be happy. If my mate changed, I'd be happy. If my financial situation changed, I'd be happy. If I get another body, I'd be happy. If I get another person who will care about me, I'd be happy. Then you're actually, according to the course, on the path that will never work. Because your happiness will never be outside of you. It's going to come from the happiness that you feel within yourself. And then you're going to magnetize, draw to you, and create those things that reflect that back to you. It doesn't. A miserable person who hates themselves is not going to attract somebody that's going to make them feel good on a permanent basis. First of all, a truly happy person wouldn't want to be with you. They're not going to stop their journey of joy and peace and go, I just want to go fix a dysfunctional person. I think I'll stop and try to get somebody who doesn't know anything about love to love me. But I used to think that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I can be as pitiful as I can be, but somebody's just going to love me. You know, yeah, I'm being loved all the time. We all being loved by God all the time. But it doesn't exactly make people jump up and down and skip. Why? Because their perception of themselves is not that they're loved. So even if they're being loved, they don't know it. Your child can hate themselves, but if you love them, but they hate themselves, they don't know it. We're being loved more than we can possibly imagine right now. But I don't see anybody skipping around the room in joy. It's why? Because of what I'm telling myself. Because of how I feel about myself right now. That's how I'm acting. Deep. So none of y'all have any thoughts about anything that you can't hear. I don't believe it. I don't believe that you all got up $4 a gallon gas and are coming over here and don't have anything to say to me or talk about it. Okay, thank you. It's like we got to get proactive about our healing. We've got to take advantage of each other to move to the next level. Our ego will keep us the same. It really will. Don't be trapped by your personality. Don't let your personality rule you. Just because you're quiet and you're always quiet, then grab your personality and say, yeah, I'm going to do something different this time. Where I normally don't say something, I'm asking to say something. Grab hold of your personality self. Keep it from always making the same realities over and over again. Yeah.
I think sometimes when you say these things,
mm-hmm.
you say the same things over and over and over and over.
Got to.
You got to. I feel like sometimes I'm totally conscious and it's just a big yes.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time,
mm-hmm.
when you say what you just said,
mm-hmm.
there's that part of my mind that's crazy, the ego,
mm-hmm.
that just doesn't get it. And I get that and I don't get it.
And what part does it just doesn't get?
Well, when you say, you know, I'm thinking, oh, so you're telling me like if I had, you know, more than enough money and love and fabulous wardrobe, you know, all those things, it's like, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really sort of struck me like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I can,
that you wouldn't, if you had those things.
That will not bring satisfaction.
Okay, thank you.
So, and the part that's conscious can kind of sort of run ahead in time and say, yeah, you have it, but then you get bored.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or it was good, but it changed,
because mm-hmm.
life changes.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of keeps me conscious, but there's always that part
Thank
that
you.
Goes,
yeah,
that's really hard. I don't think it'll ever get it.
I think for most people it's the larger part, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think people think it's not the larger part,
yeah.
but I think it is the larger part. I think the larger part of the average person's mind does believe their happiness is in external things and external gifts. Even if they say they don't think so. Even if they say, oh, I realize happiness comes from within. Because I've learned through the course that what you really believe is how you act. You know, you can say anything, but in the end, what you really, so if I walk out of here today and I'm upset because something isn't going my way on the outer, then the truth is I really do believe in the part of my mind that really believes my happiness is outside of myself. I don't even have to go through it. I wonder if that's true because I'm acting on that. You know, I'm not stopping in the middle of being upset and going, ooh, really, wait a minute. My upset really isn't coming from that other person. That's not the reason why I'm upset. I'm upset because I'm looking for happiness outside of myself, and I'm upset because of something I'm telling myself right now. How many times a day you stop and say that? Right. So the truth is, the majority of the time, my consciousness really is just like everybody else in the world. Because most people in the world believe that. And so then I used to wonder, well, why am I on such a spiritual path, but I tend to attract people who tend to be so regular? And it's like, you are too, Earl. You're just using fancier terms, but you still believe, you know. Like even if a person is trying to manifest, and they go, "I'm going to use the secret and all these manifesting thoughts, and I'm going to draw me a new car and a new relationship or whatever," they're just using metaphysical means to still seek what happens outside of themselves. So their thought system isn't any different from what it was in the first place. It's just they're using what they think of as a more sophisticated, advanced way of getting the external satisfaction. It's still not coming from any awareness that your happiness comes from within.
You know, and I just get that because I keep thinking of the tsunami, how they talk about how the water level, it sucks back and then it rushes forward with the tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
So the beach, all of a sudden there was no water where there was supposed to be water. And mm-hmm. It was great big, you know what I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
right? That's what I keep thinking, like I reached my goal, but then like where I am now, like it, all the water sucks back, like there's nothing.
mm-hmm.
And my unconscious, my ego, hated it. I hate this. I want all this stuff. But the part of me that was conscious, or that is conscious, was like, you're doing fine, just stay with it. And I was like, wow, I'm really not happy. I don't like this. I want my stuff. I want my stuff. I want my stuff. And I feel like, and I kept thinking, like, push through it. And all of a sudden now, I don't have this all my stuff, but I do. Because I'm still here. And I am smiling. And I am happy. And I am okay.
Yes.
So I like my stuff. I don't need my stuff. Like, I'm still here. You know, I still got
okay, so you've made a major shift in consciousness.
I believe I have.
There's no doubt about it. That is a major shift in consciousness.
Because there's nothing there for me to hold on to.
And it doesn't mean you can't. See, people sometimes take what I'm saying to mean you can't. It's not okay to want those things. It's not okay to have those things.
Right.
It's not, you know, and it's not saying that at all. You know, it's like knock yourself out. You know, we've been doing this since we were kids. I don't know about you, but from the time I was 5 or 6 years old, I wanted toys. And I thought if I got the toy, it would make me happy. Then when I got a teenager, I thought if I'd get me a girl, it'd make me happy. And then, you know, it's like nothing's changed. It's not like it's a different script I'm acting out than I did when I was a little kid. But the one thing I noticed with every single thing that I've ever gotten, none of it has ever satisfied me permanently. And none of it has ever satisfied me completely. Not one single thing. As soon as I get something, I watch the next carrot I'll dangle in front of me. Just almost before I can even get it, you know. And then the society will tell me if I don't do that I don't have ambition. I don't have drive. Unless I'm constantly trying to get something that I don't have. It doesn't ever encourage you to find satisfaction in what you have achieved.
So wanting externals is pointless.
It's pointless. It's pointless if you think it's what's going to ultimately make you happy, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
But at this point, yeah. he talks about in here putting makeup on a corpse.
Well,
I really want it. Just
yeah.
Something to that.
Well, he's just basically saying if you're into the body without taking a look at the mind. You just well just to me it's the same as going down to a funeral home and falling in love with the body in the casket. You know what I mean? It's like you're not dealing with the person, you're just dealing with the form.
Right.
And yeah, it's not the real self. And so most people are attracted to people because of the way they look.
So the external ambition then, how does that really play? The deeper I get into the course, the less I really care about my business, about acquisition, about standing. About all these extremes.
That's all well and good if you're not allowing that attitude to take you into a struggle consciousness, or you're not taking care of your responsibilities, or to make you not have the income that you need to live comfortably off of. It's that then at that point your perception of it is an ego trip.
Okay.
So it's one thing to recognize that something won't ultimately make you happy. It's another thing that your ego make you not handle the responsibilities at this point. That you believe would be necessary to take care of yourself. Because the truth is, you have to be honest with yourself, do I really believe that I could do absolutely nothing and I'm going to be provided for in an abundant way? Because that's really about being honest with yourself. You see what I'm saying? If you're not honest with yourself, you hurt yourself. And that's why the Course says pain always comes from self-deception. You know, because I've seen people do that. They go, oh, I'm reading the course. It said it doesn't mean anything. And so now I'm not going to do blah, blah, blah. Okay, then you didn't let it mean anything when you stand on the corner hole saying, please give me a dollar. You know, so just take the don't mean anything all the way through to the end now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But in most cases, it's just a person that is not really motivated to do anything anyway. So they're just looking for an excuse not to do what they wouldn't do anyway. It has nothing to do with spiritual awakening. It's laziness. And they just don't want to do anything anyway, so they just take the course and interpret it in such a way that it'll make it okay not to do nothing, which they would have done with anything else.
That's a good point.
Well, that's the whole thing about the course. It teaches you how to tell the difference between when you're trying to fool yourself through the part of you that doesn't really love you, and when you really are getting genuine advice from spirit. Because the ego part of the mind is very ingenious in its ways of screwing us around while making it look like you're following spiritual truth. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a person in an abusive relationship with somebody that's beating them up every day, and they'll say, well, I got to learn this lesson somewhere, so I just as well learn it with them. Rather than get out of this relationship, I got to learn the lesson, so I just learn it with the person that's beating me up every day. See, that's taking the truth, twisting it around so that you still are being hurt and you're still punishing yourself because you don't love yourself. So, therefore, you're going to figure out a way to stay with somebody that's abusing you. You follow what I'm saying? It all comes back to how do I feel about myself? Do I love myself? Do I value myself? Or do I not value myself? So I always set up situations that it looks like I'm at the victim effect level of my experience. And it looks like everything is controlling me and I have no control over nothing that's happening around me whatsoever. Yeah.
I find that I've had these really good days, and I don't know if a person could have all good days.
That's the goal, but you're not going to have all good days on the way to having all good days. Because if you were already capable of doing that, you wouldn't have the need to study the book in the first place. So, you know.
I kind of visualize when I see sacrifice and guilt here over here, this pile like junk.
There you go.
I can put it in the roll off and send it away.
Yeah.
And then I have a day where I just feel real easy and gentle, and somebody comes around and I just say, send peace and love from my heart to yours.
And
then the next morning I wake up and my ego's in bed beside me.
But what's cool about whether you wake up with your old self or wake up with your new self is the answer never changes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing that's so cool about it, though. If I wake up in a good mood or a bad mood, the answer is always going to be the same. I need to change my interpretation. I need to change my perception. And I got a book, and I got lessons, and I got exercises that will help me do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is always the same. The Course defines moods as constantly changing interpretations of yourself. And I think it's a perfect definition of a mood. Why am I in a good mood? Well, because of what I'm telling myself right now. Why am I in a bad mood 2 hours later? Well, it's because of what I'm telling myself 2 hours later. So my moods are coming from what I'm telling myself. And so to change my mood, I just need to change the story. I'm gonna keep, and I say that over and over again. You know why I say that over and over again? Because we don't believe it. You know, some people will stop coming to the class because they think they're not hearing new stuff. And they don't realize that's just more stuff for you to try to remember or more stuff to forget. It would be easier to have something that works that you could focus on that you just needed to remember to use that all as much as possible than to come up with constantly changing answers all the time. There's more and more different things and different ways to handle situations, it would seem to me. But most people associate, the course says most people associate education and learning with more descriptions, more labels. It's like the more labels for things we can come up with, the more educated we are, you know, rather than realizing that, well, rather than trying to remember 100 different things for me to have a peaceful day, would it make more sense that if I could remember one thing that would give me a peaceful day? It would be easier.
Sometimes I see I'm reading, and I just go, this is easy. This is easier than I remember you sitting up there just busting up laughing one day. They say so, it's easy,
though.
It's kind of
like he said.
Think about how
fun. Well, he says the way is not hard; it's very different.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not nothing that the course suggests that we do is hard. It's just so different from what we're in the habit of doing that we just don't do it.
Yeah.
It's actually easier than anything that we do. You know what I'm saying? It would be much easier for me to change my perception, go into a loving, harmonious place, learn how to listen to the voice for God, follow that guidance, and allow myself to have a relationship or a career or whatever that I needed to be because it was in divine order, than for me to try to wonder what I'm going to do, hope I can pass out a bunch of resumes, then hope I can be on the interview, hope I impress the interviewer in competition with the 200 more people that's trying to get the same job, and then go from there to another building. But most people would rather do that than spend 5 minutes in meditation in the morning. I bet you most of us do more stuff physically in the world all day long, and we're being willing to do it, the struggle, the hustle, and all of that, then to actually change our perception and learn how to listen to guidance. Which is easier. It's easier. It's a lot easier for me to tell you where my apartment is located than for you to have to find it on your own. It's a lot easier for Spirit to tell us what we need to do and where we need to go and who we need to talk to and where the answer is than for us to try to figure it all out. But the Course says we basically don't believe in a higher power, so therefore we think we've got to do everything autonomously and on our own. You know, that's why people say, I believe in God and I'm scared. Totally contradictory. I believe in God, but I'm wondering how I'm going to make it tomorrow. Totally contradictory. But you see it all the time. I got a ton of faith, but I'm scared to death. I really love my mate, but I got a private detective following them. And they don't even see how contradictory that is. I love you, but I'm jealous. No, wait a minute. If we got a real relationship, then it can't be threatened by another person. I don't have to be afraid to have you out of my sight for 5 minutes. The fact that I'm afraid to have you out of my sight for 5 minutes means I don't believe we have a real love. But to the world, that sounds totally normal. I've even heard people say, if you love them, that's why you feel jealous. You're jealous because you love them. Which a conscious being knows that you're jealous because you're afraid of loss. You're not jealous because you love them. You're jealous because you're afraid. So two afraid people usually get together and have a relationship with each other. That's what usually happens, right? And then he says that you have a relationship that's destructive, selfish, and childish, or egocentric. Then what do? Well, you don't have to get rid of the person if you really feel a connection. He says, why don't you let the relationship be transformed into a perfect lesson of forgiveness and a relationship that wakes you up from the dream and the opportunity to let yourself be healed. You could also use that relationship for the same thing, but they usually don't start out that way. They usually start out because two people are trying to get something to make themselves feel complete from the other person. That's how they usually start out. You got something I like and I want to get it from you. Let's go out. Let's hook up. You know, you got my love. Make sure nobody else gets it. That's the world. That's what attracted me to this. It's just so straight up. But I find that most people don't like straight up truth. They really don't. That's why these classes don't ever get huge. Very few people can take straight up truth very long. Because they have to change their mind if they do. They have to. And most people are looking for everything to change without them changing. I know I did. I go to class so you can show me how that everything's going to change without me changing. And when I get to that class, that's the one I want. Don't work that way. I'm sorry. I wish I could tell you did. But it doesn't. It's easier than the way we made it. So, the next paragraph says, perception is a function of the body. What? Perception is a function of the body. What does that mean? So that means perception represents a limit on awareness. That's interesting. Your perception is a limit on your awareness. That's wow. That's deep. He says perception sees through the body's eyes and perception hears through the body's ears. So perception evokes the limited responses which the body makes. The body appears to be largely self-motivated and independent, yet the body actually is responding only to the intentions of the mind. Your body did not make the decision to cross your leg. Your body did not make the decision for you to sit down. Your body did not make the decision that it would come to the church. So are we in agreement that even though it looks like the body is independent, your body is really just following orders? So it says, if the mind uses the body for attack in any form, then the body becomes prey to sickness, age, and decay. So when a person uses their body for attack, they get sick, they age, they die. So that's where sickness, aging, and death comes from.
And that's what we're all
doing. And it comes from attacking. What do you mean attacking? Attacking yourself all day, putting yourself down, not loving you, mad at everybody else, wish everybody else obtained. Everybody got that? So that means the next time that you're sick, you're not going to say it's caused by a virus. You're going to say it's being caused by the way that you're thinking about yourself. That's what it means when you say you got it. That means the next time that you feel in pain, you're going to go straight to, I'm going through this pain right now because of some kind of attack thoughts going on in my mind, and I'm not going through this pain right now because I'm 70 years old. I'm not going through this pain because, see, that's what I had to get. That if I say I got it, then it really means I'm using that interpretation as the way I'm seeing, as the cause of whatever I'm going through. It doesn't mean I understand what you said. It means I'm using that perception to define what's going on in my life right now. So most people say, oh, okay, I hear that. Okay, attack is what brings about age, decay, and death. Everybody can say that, right? Okay, I hear that. Okay, but you're going to get your flu shot, right? Because what? The flu? Because the flu is going to be caused by this external virus that's going to get you. It has nothing to do with your consciousness at all. See the difference between the rubber hitting the road and seeing something?
Are you meeting people, I mean, in your 27, 28 years of doing it, who are not aging, who are not decaying, who are healthy and
strong? I'm meeting people who are healthy and healthy. Well, see, health has to do with waking up to who you really are. The Course says there's no difference between a healthy body and a sick body. If the mind that's healthy or sick still just believes it's a body. Having a perception of yourself as a physical body that's well, he says there's no difference from having a perception of yourself as a physical body that's sick. Both of you still have lost sight that you're a spiritual being having a physical experience. So he says what we try to do is trade one little image for another image. So what I'm trying to do is trade my image of being sick for my image of being well, while my mind is still as unconscious as it ever was. Which he says isn't a real change at all, because all you're going to do is recreate it in another way. So first it was a cold, now it's a backache. Now it's a stomach ache, and then it's a headache. He says you really haven't healed, you just changed the form of the error.
So then what happens when people are getting ready to take their last breath, you know, hospice or something to that effect? I mean, what happens? Are they now moving into peace, or are they kind
of
like...
No, they're now moving out of the body.
They are moving out.
That's what death is. It's like dropping this earthly vehicle. Now, whether they're going into peace or not depends on their own level of spiritual awareness and development.
Which we're talking about now.
If they go to sleep and they're unconscious, then they just create another body with the same unconscious mind that they already had. Some people think, like, if you die, this is what the Course says. We don't have to believe it. My interpretation of what it's saying. Okay, I'm going to be real clear about that. You don't have to believe a darn thing I'm saying. We had a class where we're hearing some ideas. But if your consciousness and your awareness is what's creating your reality in the first place, and what's really ultimately creating your body, because you're more than a body. That's what the whole premise of the Course is. You're more than a body. We're all more than a body. So death really isn't to be feared, except to somebody who doesn't know that they're more than a body. So the people that's afraid to die is people who think they're bodies. So that's why most people are afraid to die, because they think they're their bodies. But that doesn't mean it's true.
So then a person is getting ready to die, and they know that they're more than a body.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I understand that I'm more than a body right now, and so I'm about to let go of this body,
mm-hmm.
but I'm more than this body.
Right.
So basically, because I'm more than this body, the consciousness of me being more than this body is really what I am.
That's what you are.
Okay.
That's exactly what it's saying. That's what you really are. And I found out I don't really know if I believe I'm more than my body until the moment of death. You know what I'm saying? It's like I found out that I say a lot of stuff that when it actually comes down to it, I don't really know until it happens. You know, I remember saying, you know, I wasn't jealous. You know, I couldn't have a jealous feeling or whatever, because it had been something I'd ever experienced. It was a while back. But when it happened, it wasn't until the situation showed up that I found that I still was capable of being that. But I could tell myself that all I wanted to. It wasn't until the situation presented itself that Earl could really go, oh, I still do have some thoughts of fear that I need to have. But I could say all day long, that, you know, so the things that I say I am, I could almost preface it with, this is what I think I am, this is what I want to be, this is the way I like to see myself, but I really don't know until the situation presents itself. And like something like if the doctor said, Earl, you got 6 months to live. Okay, at that point, I would know how I felt about life after death. But up until then, I could just say, oh, I'm not a body. I'm free. I don't have any. Oh, I'm just a spiritual being. It has nothing to do with the body. Another way you can tell real quickly how much you identify with the body is how you react to a loved one's death. That's the easiest way in the world to tell whether or not you believe that you are a body. Did you know that? You said, Crystal can think that I can tell it by the way I react to my death. But the truth is, you can tell faster since your death, once that happened, well, that's a moot point. But if you look at, but if I'm close to you and you go, then I get a chance to kind of get a feeling of, do I really believe you are a body, and do I really believe you're gone forever? And you don't exist. I'm not saying I wouldn't miss having your physical presence. That's not the same as I'm missing having your physical presence around. It's different from, I think you don't exist anymore. That's two different things. So I noticed how I reacted to my mother's transition, and I noticed how I reacted to my brother's transition, and we were extremely close. And it was at that point that I realized that the Course in Miracles had a profound effect on the way I looked at life and death. But I had no way of knowing that until somebody special to me went through that transition. Then I could safely assume that I do have a different perception of what that means. But up until then, I didn't know. So pay attention to how upset you get about what's happening to other people to kind of gauge how you see reality as being. That's a quick way. Okay. He says, okay, this is the part about the Course. It might say stuff like how you can think things that might create age and death and decay. But always remember when you read the Course, as soon as you read something that might be a little frightening or jarring to your mind, right behind that, it usually always tells you the way to look at it that'll take the pain and fear away and give you a positive and give you a positive experience of what's happening. The ego mind will tell you to stop at the part that startles you and argue about, is there life after death? Is it really my thoughts that's creating the age and decay? How can you prove that it's my thought? How do you know it's not being caused by the virus? And so while a person is focusing on that aspect, they could be doing the next part, which says, if the mind accepts the Holy Spirit's purpose for the body instead, the body becomes a useful way of communicating with others, invulnerable as long as the body is needed, and to be gently laid aside when the use of the body is over. I'm going to say that again. If you use your body for love, if you're really using your body for truth, if you're really using your body for awakening, according to what this is saying, then your body will be invulnerable. It can't be hurt. It wouldn't be harmed. That's deep. That is deep. So rather than try to figure out how I can not have the attack thoughts that would hurt my body, it would be better for me to invest my time in trying to use my body correctly. See the difference? Most people be going, well, how can I get rid of these anger thoughts that I have toward my mama if that's what's making me sick? How can I get rid of those thoughts? And it would be better to go, how can I use my body for the purpose of love and the purpose of healing and the purpose of peace? How can I use my body to bring more joy and light into my environment rather than figure out how do I get rid of my jealousy? See the difference? One, I'm focused on the solution. The other one, I'm focused on the problem. So if you made a decision today that you really wanted your body to be used for love and used for truth, that would be the most protective idea that you could give your body, is that you want to use it for a high purpose. Most people don't. They don't want to use their body for a high purpose. They just want to use their body to get stuff. Right? And the Course says, well, you're innocent. That's not a sin. But you're also not protecting it because you're not concerned about love. You're not concerned about union. You're not concerned about joining. So does it matter if your friends and relatives believe that? Not really. Only thing that matters is that you use your truth on you. That's the other thing that it says is how you make it really easy too. You apply your truth to you.
Sometimes I'll walk into a place and that, like you're saying, that everyone looks like they've just gone through the crucifixion. And I feel sad. It's like, God, they're so dismal. And so I kind of go, hi, how are you?
That's great. That's beautiful, though.
And then a lot of often they'll sort of respond and kind, but it's kind of a little bit sad when you look around and you
see that
kind
of. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And
it is.
How do you deal with it? Do you just go, well, that's
what I... No, I don't. I just go, it's a call for love. See, my one, I use the Holy Spirit's judgment as much as I possibly can. And of course, says the Holy Spirit's judgment would be, everything is either love or a call for love. This is either a call, this is love or a call for God, a call to help, a call for healing. Because the truth is, I don't really know what those people are going through. I don't really know what they're thinking. So I really can't judge where they're coming from. Or why they're coming from that place. But what I could do is use the judgment and say, I don't care where you're coming from, I know that in your heart you really want love. In your heart you really want help. So if I see it that way, then I can use a judgment that doesn't backfire on me. Because if I see what you're doing as a call for love, then my mind will also think what I'm doing when I'm upset and unhappy is a call for love. Because the only thing that makes you different from those people in the room that look sad is time. That's the only difference. Because you have times when you don't feel up and you don't feel good, right? So really the only difference between you all was this was a moment you felt pretty cool. That's the only difference. And then you could be feeling bad and you could run into that same person and that was the day they're feeling good. So the Course says the only difference between any of us is time. We all go through the same things. We just go through it at a different time. So then we tell each other we're different.
Well, it comes back to the bodies again, separating us.
Right.
Without perceptions.
Right. That's the whole purpose of the body, is to make us think we're separate. And he says that was the original purpose of it. The original purpose was to be separate. Now the purpose is to use it to connect and join. Because we did separation. It's almost like been there, done that. We've done separation. We don't have to worry about separation. Don't y'all think we've done separation and difference pretty good? I mean, it looks like y'all are in separate bodies from me. And it certainly looks like you all are different from me. So I don't have to work on that. Like, it's kind of funny when I see people working on individuality. It's like, but you already are different. That's done. You might not let yourself have peace about it. You know, you might not be using your difference in a way that heals by not using your individuality for love. Like this is my own unique way of expressing love. And everybody in here would have theirs. That's the beauty of our so-called difference, is that all of us could be bringing love to the table in our own unique way. And that would make it fun. But we'd have the same purpose. So we would be the same. So it's not like we'd all look like little replicas of each other. We still have our individual personalities and stuff, but we would just be using it for each other's mutual peace. And you wouldn't have any competition because, let's face it, there's nobody else that looks like you that is you. So where's the competition? You know? When I think about going out teaching and doing stuff, I don't think in terms of being in competition with any other teacher. There is no other teacher like me. Literally. Now, if I went out here and said, I'm going to be like Marianne Williamson, and I'm going to be like Wayne Dyer, and I'm going to be like Oprah Winfrey, now I got a problem, because I'm not those people. But that's what people do. They go out, and they think that they're in competition with somebody as if they don't have their own unique expression of the divine, that nobody else can do it the way they do it. And there'll be people who need it just the way you do it. So I don't have to worry about taking anybody else's students or anybody else taking my students or any such illusion like that. Whoever was supposed to be coming to my life, because the way I am would be best for them, they come. And I didn't go out and grab anybody in here. And then you're going to leave. And then somebody else is going to come. It's been happening for 28 years. So what did I learn in 28 years? That whatever it is that's taking care of me, whatever it is that has to do with my function, it always sends those who need me the way that I am. But if I got attached to you all, then I would imprison you all, and then it wouldn't be okay for you not to come, and then I'd be trying to hunt you down when you wasn't here, and then I'd feel like I was a pitiful teacher if you didn't show up. You see the difference between knowing something that's happening in divine order and believing in this competition? And also, I wouldn't tell you all that there were two other people teaching the Course in Miracles here, because you might stop coming to my class and go to theirs. And I've seen teachers like that. In church, it's like that.
Who else is teaching here?
Well, right now, Anna Godow is doing a class on Monday night, Rocky Mountain Miracle Sunday at a fire. And
Joy's here on Tuesday.
And Joy's here on Tuesday. And the thing that's cool about that is really the more people that study the course through many people, the more people that will come to the class. Because there's more people aware of the course. That's why it can be 1,000 Christian churches and all of them be full. Why? Because the more Christians you got, the more possibility that they're going to go to different places and support Christian churches. So it's always, I subscribe to the ever-expanding path theory. You know what I'm saying? It's like the more you share, the more it is for everybody else to have. But fearful minds think that there's just a limited amount of everything, and then they have to protect it at all costs. That's what fearful minds do. I don't look at it that way. I wish it was 30 classes of teachers doing the Course in Miracles here per week. My classes would become larger, and theirs would too, because there'd be cross-pollination of the groups. You know, same thing about love. There are more people that would love you than you could ever get around to. To deny yourself love because you think if you don't have this person, you would never experience love, it's the same thing. It's the same limitation. And a person who thinks that you're desperate to be with them, or you're not going to be able to make it, they're going to control you, manipulate you, and dominate you. Because you're acting like they're your everything in the sense that without them you could never have any happiness. That's giving your power away. But people do it every day, and they call it love. It's just the opposite of what we were taught almost. It's like the truth is almost just the opposite of everything we were taught. And I like that. To me, that's good. That's good news. You know, I'm glad that I don't think I'm separate from you because we have two different color bodies and we two different ages and you live in another part of the country. And so just because you walk in the door and the way you look, I don't like you because I think you're different from me. And I'm a black dude and you a white dude. And all the rest of that separation stuff. You know what I'm saying? I'd much rather go, hey, you know, you and I are one. And we both want to be happy, and we both doing the best we can to be there, and we trying to be as loving as we can, and we both living out our belief system as best we can. And we ought to join on giving each other peace. I would much rather have that approach with you than just don't like you because you have a different appearance than me. Separation just doesn't, in that sense, the Course says, it never brings about any peace. That's the biggest challenge between men and women. It's the same thing. They think they're so different. They don't join on where they're the same. They do that. Women are from Venus, men are from Mars. So you emphasize the differences and then expect to join. It's insane. It's like if you want to join, you have to emphasize where you're both the same, where you want to connect, where you're alike. Then you can use your differences to your advantage. Then it's fun if it looks like you're in a male body and I'm in a female body. But even though it looks like that, you want to be happy, I want to be happy. You want peace, I want peace. You want to fulfill life, I want to fulfill life. You want to be free to be who you are, I want to be free to be who I am. We both need to keep our agreements with each other. We need to be in integrity with each other. You see what I'm saying? It's like what make us have peace with each other has nothing to do with our sexual gender difference. Now that we've joined in mind, now we can enjoy what appears to be the difference in our bodies. If you're into bodies that are different from yours, it's deep. You know, love doesn't know a body. Love goes beyond the body. That's why people freak out when they find themselves loving somebody of the same gender, and the world is condemning them for that because to them it doesn't make any sense. Love doesn't have anything to do with my body, but the way I'm feeling about this person is a feeling that I'm having. It's a connection that I'm having that transcends their body. It's deep. But if you think you're a body, then you're judging all of it. And you're condemning all of it. Why? Because you are this body. You are this separate male body. I am this separate female body. It's deep. When you get into really into the idea of us being one, the ramifications of that is so far beyond what the average person thinks about. You know, if you really are one with me and what I do to you, I'm doing to myself, that's a powerful idea. It would end everything that we're doing to hurt each other if we loved ourselves. Because if a person doesn't love themselves, then they act, of course, as they actually attack other people so that they can be attacked because they don't like themselves and they want to be attacked. And the easiest way to be attacked is to attack somebody else. So if I don't love myself, I'm always be messing with people. when you see those people that's always picking on people and mess, you know what are they doing? They're increasing the possibility they will be attacked. So it looks like they're brave and bold, and they're just kind of bullying people, but the truth is they hate themselves so much they're hoping somebody will kill them.
And how do you deal with those kind of people?
Not be on the level of consciousness that you attract them to you in the first place. And if you do attract them to you, be able to see it as a call for love and then do the best you can in that moment. Because that's all you're going to do anyway.
Well, if you can't get away from them, you know,
then you're going to, then you need to change your mind about them, or you need to leave. You need to change. You need to change internally, or you need to change the external situation. But you have to. But you're responsible for that. They're not. You're responsible for the way that you're feeling. They are not responsible for the way that you're feeling. The way that you're feeling is coming from what you're telling yourself about their behavior. That's what's making you feel bad. So in that case, either you can learn how to learn, and that's the key word. It's not like I'm going to tell you this and you're going to be able to do it. It's a learning, right? So either you learn how to see them differently, or you change the external situation. Those are the only two choices, or you're going to suffer. But you can't make your happiness dependent on changing them, because you can't. You know you can't. You know, we already know what we can. Isn't that sickeningly simple? But then it puts the responsibility on me. Do I have the guts to change the external situation? Do I have the guts to go into some other situation if it's not working for me? Am I willing to put the time in learning how to see them differently? Or do I just want to stay the way I am right now and want to stop getting upset about them? Or I want them to change miraculously overnight and just be okay, and then I won't be upset about them. I have to realize that I'm the one that's making myself get upset about their behavior. Because everybody's not. That's the trip. The person that you don't like, everybody don't like them. So they don't need to change for you. Some people cool with them. Why do they need to change for you? But that's the way I used to live. Like, everybody, my boss needs to change for me, my coworkers need to change for me, my wife needed to change for me, my children. It's like everybody needed to change for me. Races needed to change for me. Whole races. I can remember that. Whole genders. Women needed to change. White folk needed to change. Americans needed to change. Russians needed to change. The Iraqis need to change. And as soon as they change, we'll be happy over here in America. The gas prices need to change. As soon as the gas price change, then we'll be a happy camper. You see how everything is something you can't control. It still happens depends on something you can't control. That's the trick. Because the one thing you can control is the way you see things. That's the one thing. Like, I was counseling someone and they were saying to me, I don't know if I buy this whole thing about my thoughts and my emotions and create my physical experience. I said, that's great. That's okay. You don't have to accept that, you know. It's not important that you accept that. I said, but would you be willing to take it another level then? How about this? You are the one that's creating the way you're seeing things. Can you buy that? And I've never seen anybody that said no. Sometimes they can't buy that they're a creator, but they can definitely buy they're the one that's making the way that they see things. And they don't realize that if you just accept that, you're going to change everything in the physical. So don't even start with it. Am I the one that's manifesting physical things? Yeah, forget that. Go, how can I change? I'm making myself feel the way I feel right now. And sometimes you can start conversations with people like that way. Like, right now, I'm making myself feel real upset about what you're doing right now. I'm making myself feel really angry about how late you're coming home for dinner. So you're expressing what you honestly feel, but you're empowering yourself because you're telling yourself you're the one that's making you feel that way about it. Which is different from going, you are making me mad. See, that's giving you the power. I can say, I'm making myself mad about you. Now I'm honestly communicating with you, but I'm also empowering myself. And so I'm not losing my power, I'm gaining my power. Just small little twists like that is all it would take to change your entire world. Just little stuff like that. If you just went out here today and went, I don't like this guy, I'm making myself mad at this guy. that would give you power. And it would eventually get you unmad at the guy, which will trip you out. All of a sudden, you'll notice he's not upsetting you like he used to. If you do it over and over again, what you'll find is the resistance will drop. I'm making myself mad. I'm making myself upset. You see, all of a sudden, your mind will go, wait a minute, what am I doing that for? And it doesn't mean I can't. I have to prove of his behavior. I just don't have to tag myself about his behavior. Because he doesn't feel it. Do you know that some people never let themselves have another relationship and they feel a lot of grievances and upset about another person they used to be in a relationship with? And the person that they used to be in a relationship with is like in the Bahamas partying. But they are making themselves miserable. They won't even let themselves have a new relationship. Because they're so mad at this person. But this person don't even know about their pain. So that's why I had to let go of that thing about keeping myself upset all the time about what other people were doing. Because I realized they weren't feeling my pain. I was. They didn't even care. They didn't even know. Most of the time, most of the people you're upset about, they don't even know it. They don't even feel it. You do. And so the Course teaches that. Stop attacking yourself. That's what I want to invite all of us to do as we go back out into the lab, you know. Don't attack yourself. As much as you can today, try not to attack yourself. And if you do, just own it. I'm making myself feel weird right now. I'm making myself feel depressed right now. I'm making myself feel good right now. I'm making myself feel loved right now. Empower you. It's you that's doing it by the way you're thinking. Okay, there won't be a class next Wednesday, and there won't be a class next Thursday, but they'll resume the following week. All right, let me do the love offering, and then we can run out into the lab and practice any of this stuff we just heard.